So to kick off with this year's seminar, I'm glad to introduce Jerry Barnes, who is a researcher at the University of East Anglia. He did his undergraduate in zoology at Warwick, and then his master's here in Oxford in the forestry, and then had a long and distinguished career in local government, for which he received an MBE for his services to forestry and committees. And then did a master's in history at the University of East Anglia, which was followed by a PhD in landscape history, and has been followed by subsequent work on landscape history. And he has a book, which is I've got a flyer here, that came out last year, which is an elaboration of the subject of his talk, Rethinking Ancient Woodlands. And there are flyers there if you want to know more about that book. Okay, welcome.
Good, thank you very much. And the joke about my age is that I studied forestry here so long ago that I was talking to my next door neighbours a couple of weeks ago, and they gleefully pointed out that the period in which I studied here is now being taught at the local middle school as part of the history curriculum. So welcome to the 1970s. Rethinking Ancient Woodland. I spent most of my career looking at woodlands one way or another. I retired as head of environment at Norfolk County Council, so I had quite a wide remit. A tiny bit of that was to do with woodland. But most of my spare time I spent studying woodland. I did my PhD looking at the woodland in Norfolk. And then once I finished my PhD, I carried on for about another 10 years doing the sort of on-site research, which I'll talk about today. Which culminated in the book. So just to bring everybody up to speed, I'm just going to talk a little bit about what ancient woodland is. Essentially, it's woodland that is thought to have been continuously wooded since at least 1600. That's a slightly arbitrary date, but that's the definition, and we can discuss that later. Generally characterised by coppice with standards. You're all familiar with what coppice with standards is, I imagine. You know, tall standard trees with regrowth coming up underneath, which is cut on a relatively short cycle. It's also characterised by woodland indicator species. This is the sort of ground flora. And the important thing to remember about ancient woodland is that it's a very good branding, if you like. It's been extremely valuable as a branding exercise. And it's part of that branding is that people imagine that it's quite a stable thing in the countryside, and it's a link to the wildwood, generally only modified by management. The model, if you like, emphasises this stability. Now, the ancient woodland inventory was created just about when I was starting my career in the late 70s, early 80s, and actually it was trialled initially in Norfolk. And it was done at a time, and it's quite important to remember this. I think the youngsters in the audience perhaps forget this history. Perhaps it's a good thing it's being taught as history in schools. But it was done at a time when woodland had been and was still being actively grubbed out. There were still grants available for grubbing out hedges and bits of ancient woodland. And, of course, plenty of grants available for coniferising these ancient woodlands. And acts as a guide in the formulation of conservation policies. And having worked for both local and national government organisations, politicians love these labels. As far as this talk is concerned, there's two types of ancient woodlands that you need to bear in mind. There's primary ancient woodland, that's those occupying sites that have been occupied since prehistory. And secondary ancient woodland, that's areas that have been cleared for other uses and then retreed before about 1600. So just bear in mind those two distinctions. We're aware that woodland has been radically altered by human exploitation, but perhaps not as aware as we need to be, and that little, if any, wildwood actually survives. But the idea persists. The mythology, if you like, persists. The ancient woodland represents, at least in the sense that they are primary, a direct link with the natural vegetation. and that variations in the composition reflect variations in the wildwood itself. And Rackham kind of cemented this mythology to some degree. Here's an example of him commentating on Bradfield wood in Suffolk. This wood is well documented back to 1252 and would still be instantly recognisable by Abbot Simon or Simon of that year. The outline of the woods was virtually unaltered until the 1960s and is demarcated by a mighty bank. So the model has been one of stability. Ancient woodlands, of course, vary in size. Small areas like Frensham in Norfolk in the 14th or 15th century had 14 small woodlands scattered across it, and these they tend to come and go in the landscape. Larger areas divided into fells, the underwood being cut on a regular rotation. This is Foxley Wood in Norfolk, lovely map of 1815, one of the larger ancient woodlands in Norfolk, and you can see long strips or fells have been established. These would have been coppiced, that area would have been coppiced, and then maybe the next year that area was done. By the time you've been through it, you'd get back to this one, cutting the things on maybe a 10-15 year cycle, whatever was appropriate. This is what coppice looks like when it's been cut a bit higher these days because of deer worries. There's a dead hedge being put in around the outside of this one to try and keep the grazing deer off. This is a typical neglected woodland, which you find particularly, well, everywhere, but this is East Anglia. This is Wayland wood, hornbeam and ash in the picture. and this is Wayland wood, which has been cut and managed. These are the standard trees being allowed to grow on for timber. And underneath the coppice, that's the first year's growth. This picture probably taken in August, something like that. So ancient woodlands, it's important to remember that the key archaeology with ancient woodlands is that they have a wood bank surrounding the wood, which was often built in the early Middle Ages. And these wood banks were often massive. The older the boundary, generally, the bigger the wood bank. And these woodland banks can indeed be found marooned within woodlands, which have been caused by later expansion, and I'll come back to that theme later. These woodland boundaries, for reasons not fully understood, I don't think, were often planted with pollards. A pollard is a tree that's been effectively coppiced at a height to allow the regrowth to get away from grazing animals. And this practice continued into the early modern period with examples on post-medieval banks. This is a good example at Eastwood Denton in South Norfolk, a pollarded hornbeam on the bank. And another one, this is Hockering Wood, very typical of the sort of occasional pollard you get on the woodland banks surrounding these ancient woodlands. The other part of the branding is that ancient woodlands embrace a wide range of what they call woodland indicator species. And these were thought to reflect the direct descendant of original natural woodland, or the consequence of longevity and stability of land use. And these are the sorts of things you get, dog's mercury, primrose, wood avens, things like that. And the classic one is bluebells, of course, that's the one you're probably most familiar with. Incidentally, this is Lower Wood Ashwell Thorpe, which is the wood where Calara or ash dieback was first discovered in the UK. Now, where are these woodlands located? Well, they tend to be located on parish and other administrative boundaries. Might sound trite saying that because you're all fairly familiar with that, but it's important to remember that fact, because when you're doing landscape history and you're walking through the landscape, the parish boundary is often the oldest feature you're going to come across within the landscape. That doesn't mean the stuff that's on the parish boundary is that age, but the parish boundaries themselves will date from at least the late Saxon period, and often from middle or even the early Saxon period, where they've been incorporated from Saxon estates of one sort or another. They also, particularly in the East Anglian context, these woodlands tend to cluster on the margins of heavy clays. And here's an example, an excerpt from part of Norfolk, the green, obviously, the woodlands, and you can see they tend to butt up against the parish boundaries. Soil map of Norfolk, East Anglia rather, as far as Norfolk's concerned, note this is the heavy soil, the brighter green is the Beccles Association soils, and this slightly muddier one is Burlingham Association. The Beccles is very heavy clay. I said that the woodlands tend to cluster on the margins of heavy soils. People think that they are on the heavy soils, but it's a bit more specific than that. They tend to be on the margins of the heavy soils. So if you plot them from the ancient woodland inventory and focus in on that, you can see that there's a tendency for them to follow the margins of the heavy soil. And there's a good reason for that, because you don't want to be managing these woodlands and dragging all your material across large expanses of heavy soil. It's just too difficult. First record of woodlands is generally Domesday, particularly in East Anglia, where there's very few Anglo-Saxon charters or anything like that. Those that do exist tend to be very generic. Woodland in Norfolk and most parts of East Anglia were recorded in terms of the number of pigs that they could support, and you can do a rough calculation to get an idea of the area involved. And here you can see what we call the wooded crescent. And that's reflected in where the ancient woodlands are now. This is where you tend to find a few on the lighter land north of Norwich and in the margins down here near King's Lynn. So what happened after Domesday? We need to understand what we're talking about when we're talking about ancient woodland. Domesday was really recording woodland within the wider waste, if you like. It was a kind of wood pasture that they were recording. They weren't recording enclosed woodland that we understand today, like Wytham Wood and the woods you might be familiar with locally, which are ancient or ancient semi-natural woodland. What they were recording was almost certainly the wood pasture. Why were they doing this at Domesday? Well, they were recording, the Normans were recording what they'd nicked from the Saxons, of course, one way or another. And what was also happening at the same time at Domesday was that the population was increasing very rapidly at that stage. So the landscape was changing, because population pressure is one of the key drivers of change within the landscape. So what happened at Domesday is that the type of woodland diverged. You had wood pasture carrying on one side, and enclosed woodlands which were enclosed with a massive bank in the 11th, 12th, 13th century, and managed as coppice with standards, a privatised woodland, if you like. The wood pasture themselves, you ended up with three types of wood pasture, just to run that past you quickly. There were the forests and the chases. Forests were the hunting areas for the kings, none of those in Norfolk. Chases, hunting areas for the nobles. There's a couple of those in Norfolk, but not that many. And then there's the sort of wider wood pasture, the wood pasture commons. This is Staverton, in just over the border in Suffolk. There's another picture of it. If you ever get a chance for a field trip, or you want to organise your own trip out there, I strongly recommend you going and having a look around. It's an absolutely wonderful place to go. There's 1,000 of these ancient pollards, and it's that sort of landscape which it gives you a feel of what it might have looked like. Of course, the pollards wouldn't have looked like this. They would have been smaller and pollarded on a more regular or frequent cycle. but that sort of wood pasture would have been very common throughout Norfolk and East Anglia, and this is quite a good example. This is the map of Bressonhall from 1516. You can actually see some of the... some of the cattle grazing. And this is Bressonhall Common. There's relics of this you can find in the countryside all over the place. This is Bayfield in North Norfolk. But of particular interest is that we have this image of commons and greens in the countryside as being almost devoid of trees these days. And the reason they're like that is because they've been overgrazed. But there are commons. This is Fritton Common in just south of Norwich, and you can see pollarded trees, and it's quite clear that these trees aren't ancient by any means. They're oldish, but not that old, and they have been pollarded in the 19th or even right up into the 20th century. And these commons were surrounded by smallholders, and each of the smallholder had a right to plant and manage trees on the bit of common directly opposite them. And that's, we can find that, the documentary evidence for that. You know, they've got a right to plant and manage trees within sort of 50 or 100 yards of the edge of the common. And this has carried on much until quite modern times, much more recent than people had anticipated. And if we look at some old maps, this is Faden, William Faden, who produced a map of Norfolk in 1797. And if you plot, this has been digitally enhanced, if you plot the commons and the woodlands from it, you'll see that they're always next to each other, which attests to this common origin, which I suggested, this divergence after Doomsday. One other sort of wood pasture, just before we come on to the ancient woodlands and the archaeology of them, were medieval deer parks. Normans very keen on deer hunting, of course. They tend to follow a similar sort of pattern. About 100 of those were established in Norfolk in 11th, 12th, 13th century. And they tended to have a sort of wood pasture appearance. They largely disappear in the 17th and 18th centuries. Rabbit warrens and fish ponds tend to disappear at the same time within the countryside, and this is because it represented a shift in what the upper classes did with their time. They became, if you like, they became more elegant. Pheasants and fox hunting largely took over, and you got people like, you know, Capability Brown, who we think of this year with the 300th anniversary, coming and, you know, creating a more elegant appearance to the landscape. And you can see this in people like, in paintings like Thomas Gainsborough's Mr. and Mrs. Andrews, that sort of thing. It's a classic example. So, ancient woodlands. These are the woodlands which, some of the woodlands we surveyed, didn't manage to put them all on, with my colleague Professor Tom Williamson. And that involves detailed walking through the woodlands and recording everything you see under your feet, basically. Now, we'll start off by looking at some of the primary ancient woodland. Eastward Denton, this is a primary ancient woodland that has contracted progressively. There's a substantial wood bank. Trouble with losing your eyesight when you get older. At B and A. There's also a substantial wood bank at F. It's always very important when you're looking at woodlands to look outside the woodland as well as within it. There's also a south-facing lynchet here. Now, a lynchet is where you get two different levels next to each other. Can be within one field. One area, the higher one, has been under some sort of stable feature in the countryside, generally woodland, and the other bit has been under the plough, under arable, and it's been progressively ploughed away, and it's eroded down, and you get this sort of scarp face, a lynchet. can be anything from, you know, just a couple of inches, 3 inches. If you've got a keen eye, you can spot it. Or even in, sometimes I've seen them almost 2 metres deep. So this suggests, in this, the other thing you often find in woodland is these sort of hollow ways. This is the parish boundary with pollards in it. And C is a smaller bank, smaller than B and A. So what we seem to have here is a fairly clear example of a woodland that was enclosed in the 11th, 12th century, that sort of time, and has shrunk to its present size, probably still in the later medieval period. So the remaining woodland is largely primary. Not entirely sure what all of this means. Even coppice woodland were allowing a certain amount of grazing within them, but it could have been just sort of local use of some sort or another. Sexton Wood, on the other hand, which is a few miles north of Eastwood Denton, has pretty much got the boundary bank all the way around it, virtually unchanged. Tiny bit has been added, which is not uncommon, possibly something to do with a little bit of filling in of the open field system, not entirely sure. No archaeology in the woodland at all worth talking about, except lots of Second World War features, which again quite common in Norfolk woodlands. So this appears to be largely a primary ancient woodland contained within its roughly 13th century boundaries. Tyndall Wood in Norfolk. Again, we have a substantial wood bank at A, at the top there. Larger wood bank there. Smaller wood banks down at B and C, but still a reasonable size. And D, yet another extension to the woodland. And we've got reasonable maps of this. There's maps of 1615 and 1816 which show the same area as today, and a description from a manorial extent of 1270 which describes the same area of about 104 acres. So like Sexton, interestingly, the survey of 1270 suggests a coppice rotation of about 16 years. It's quite long, but not uncommon. So a primary woodland. Now, moving on to a little bit more of a dynamic nature within the landscape, this is West Bradenham Great Wood. And if we focus on this area here, A, the capital A, we've got a fairly substantial wood bank going around it here. But that area A is shown as a field on the first edition Ordnance Survey in 1880. It's clearly under the plough then. But in the 1840 map, the Tithe maps, it's recorded as woodland, and it's woodland again now. So this is quite a good example of the sort of coming and going of ancient woodland within the landscape. and further south on the woodland, again, we have a nice lynchet here at F. This area is quite a bit lower than that, but the boundary bank around it is fairly substantial. Now we have actually, very unusually, we have got a record of when the bank was put in here. It was almost certainly put in 1226, which suggests that this area here was under the plough in perhaps Roman and Saxon times, and was later incorporated as part of the ancient woodland when it was enclosed in the 12th, 13th century. Swanton Nova's Great Wood. The interesting thing about this is that it's, again, primary in character. I won't bore you too much with all the lettering, but if you look at it, this woodland in the wider context, it's almost totally surrounded by Stock Heath and Swanton Common. If you look at Faden's map, for example, the one I've mentioned from 1797, it's actually the survey work that's done in 1795. So this is, I think, almost certainly a good example of a woodland that's been carved out of the former wood pasture and enclosed, and the wood pasture has been left around it. There's the occasional hollow way running into the woodland, suggesting that perhaps part of it still had a pasture origin or use, even in medieval times. Spoorwood, this is mid-Norfolk. Yet another example of a bit added on, very common, still not entirely sure what's going on there. Maps clearly show that the woodland extended further south. Trying to think the date of the maps. There are maps available from about the 1750s which show the woodland to be about twice the size extending further south. So again, hollow way running through what would have been the middle of the woodland. Now the interesting thing about Spoorwood is that there's quite good documentary evidence. 1472 survey shows it has a density of standards of about 6.9 per acre. In other words, not many standards at all. But by 1750, it shows that the density of standards has risen tenfold to 65 an acre. And that's not uncommon, it appears, with a lot of these ancient woodlands. It's important because the more standards you've got, the more shade is being cast, and the poorer the coppice is going to be, because the coppice growth underneath needs a lot of light. And if you go to the public record office in Kew and you read some of the documents that was being written by the surveyors when they were doing the survey work for the tithe maps in the tithe apportionments in about 1840, they often say things like, nice wood, but the coppice is being spoilt for want of removal of the standards and things like that. A lot of these woodlands were effectively being neglected during the sort of early modern period because there was repeated statutes being put on the statute book asking landowners to put to have more standards within their woodlands, more trees within their woodlands rather than coppice, because the perception was, not necessarily true, but the perception was that we were short of timber for the Navy. Sometimes when woodland is cleared, we find large sites underneath, which again is suggesting that the woodland is fairly ephemeral in the landscape. A couple of good examples, Denton Castle and at Horningtoft. Denton Castle in South Norfolk, when the site was cleared of woodland in 1850, an early Norman castle was found underneath the woodland. But the absence of earthworks within the area here, relating to associated fields and closes, suggests that the castle was probably built in an area, an tract of undivided waste, and the castle was then abandoned and the area enclosed and managed as coppice at a later date. At Horningtoft in mid-Norfolk, again, woodland was cleared around about 1870 or so. it was bounded. You can still see the substantial woodland, ancient woodland bank going around it. But when it was cleared, there was a large medieval site of some sort underneath the woodland, which had clearly been abandoned, and the woodland had either been planted or by natural regeneration had encroached, and then the whole area had been enclosed as part of the enclosures. So a lot of these woodlands have pasture origins. This is wood rising again in mid-Norfolk. The draft Ordnance Survey map, I don't know if you're familiar with sources, but it is possible to look at the original drafts of the Ordnance Survey maps in the British Library. Actually, they're available online these days, a lot of them, of 1817, and Faden, similar sort of date, 1797, show these woodlands as one continuous area. So all that was one woodland. First edition Ordnance Survey, this is the second edition I've got up there, show that these areas in between still retains a wood pasture element because with scatters of trees as part of them. And then if we focus on down on this bottom woodland, Hazelhurn, we can see we've got a very large wood bank along the bottom, but there's a number of features within the woodland. There's a hollow way running through it, what appears to be an old track or field boundary, and a couple of moated sites, an associated track, and all of these are fairly clearly aligned. And it would appear that these woodlands had been accessed probably from the north at some stage, perhaps down, these were old drove roads, and they were enclosed, these sort of wood pasture areas were enclosed fairly late as a single block and then later cleared to form three woodlands. So the woodlands are having quite different origins. Haleswood in Norfolk, again, similar sort of idea. Large wood banks, B and C are smaller. I ought to just add, as I'm being recorded, that a lot of these woodlands are in private ownership, so you can't just go along and walk round them. Got to make that clear. but some of them are public. You want to chat to me, and it explains which are which in the book and that sort of thing. So a large wood bank along the top, smaller wood banks down the side, but still reasonably large. A fairly slight wood bank along the bottom. So enclosure appears to have incorporated. This enclosure, rather, here, appears to have been incorporated into the woodland when it was enclosed. So this is an earlier feature, and the woodland took it in when it was being enclosed. So again, probably it's some sort of stock enclosure. Hockering Wood is, sadly not good documentary evidence, but it's a very interesting one to walk through. It's a beautiful woodland, incidentally. It's a very large, small-leaf lime woodland, which is quite unusual. This has, a slightly different origin again. Foxley and Hevingham, similar. I won't talk about Hevingham. We have maps, poor documentary evidence, but we do have maps from about 1787, 1805 and 1839, which show the same outline for Hockering Wood. We also have in 1316 a manorial extent which refers to a park, a woodland called Swinehoe, and a little woodland. Faden, then. Faden in 1797 shows Swinehoe as a small woodland just to the north, around about here, and this is recorded as Hockering Wood. But Bryant, who did another map of Norfolk in 1825, just 25 or so years later, actually records Hockering Wood as Swinehoe Wood, and this wood has been grubbed out by then. So you've got to be always, I'm just sort of emphasising how you need to be a bit careful how you interpret maps very often. Of particular interest is that in 1360 there's a record of two deer parks in Hockering. Now, both of 100 acres. Now, one is very easy to establish on First Edition Ordnance Survey and other maps. You can work out exactly where it is. It's to the east of the wood. It's got a very obvious sort of deer park that's a classical, sort of slightly overly shaped within the landscape. But my colleague Rob Lydiard has done a fair bit of work in Hockering, and it seems fairly clear that this woodland was probably the original deer park to a large extent. Not exactly that shape, but most of the deer park. So this woodland has been enclosed as part of the deer park within the medieval period. Probably the deer park, as I said earlier, around about 1500 or so was abandoned and then the woodland was enclosed. It's a good example of where you can find some interesting features in a wood. This is clearly a wood bank. It's been marooned within the woodland, where the woodland has has expanded to the north in this case. And here's another, a massive earthwork or hollow way of some sort. Of unknown origin, my colleague who, Tom Williamson, who understands these things better than I do, thinks that may well be a prehistoric track of some sort. Okay. Now that's sort of primary type ancient woodland. We'll talk a little bit now about secondary woodland. Beckett's Wood in Wootton, just a quick one that clearly is has got enclosures at the bottom of the picture here, all aligned nicely, aligned with the road, aligned with the field system. The south and the west appear to have been realigned as late as the 19th century, include a large number, the whole wood has very large numbers of ancient woodland indicators, but it does seem to be quite a late addition to the countryside. Better example is Tibbitchell Wood, which again, ancient woodland on the ancient woodland inventory, but it quite clearly, if you survey it, it's got a very complex settled and industrial past, and the flora includes a number of ancient woodland indicators running through it. Toomer's Wood. I ought to add actually that we have discovered since we produced that it had a previous name in the early 18th century called Brick Kiln Wood, which probably tells you quite a lot of what's going on there. Toomer's Wood in West Norfolk, good banks along some of the edges, good medieval banks, but again you survey the woodland, you actually find ridge and furrow underneath, so it's clearly been under the plough at some stage in an early period. Winter's Grove in mid Norfolk, again, whole of it is down as ancient woodland, but C at the bottom there does not appear on the tithe maps. B is largely open ground in 1880, and A is clearly the original and older bit. But even that, if you look at the wider landscape, sits very comfortably in the classic sort of coaxial field system that you get in South Norfolk. So it's clearly been planted or put within the pattern of old field boundaries, which are the result of early modern piecemeal enclosure. This is a lovely map, 1617, Thomas Waterman in Norfolk. Three ancient woodlands on this map, which we just mentioned very quickly. It's Heddenham Wood, Round Grove and Long Row. Round Grove, if you survey it, clearly it's a very complex series of earthworks, and the woodland has clearly grown up over the earthworks, which couldn't be ploughed, and it's been realigned at a later period as well. A straight line is classic. Another one where there's a marked Lynchet as well, so that area has been under arable. That's some sort of manorial site or whatever, and that's been abandoned, as a lot of these sites were, and the woodland's grown up over it. Long Grove, again, Long Row, it's a droveway, fairly clearly, which has been abandoned. A bank has been put round it, and the woodland, unusual shape, but it's still managed as an ancient woodland, managed by coppice with occasional standards. And then if we focus in on Heddenham Woodland, wood within this area, this is recorded here as Hell's Yard, probably just a corruption of Hall's Yard. So 1614, this is how it was looking, the hall next to the ancient, what we now think of as the ancient woodland. If you go there now, this is the remains of the earthworks for the manorial site, and the woodland has encroached probably by natural regeneration, and then subsequently the area has been enclosed with a decent sized bank. And this area here, the woodland that was shown originally on the Thomas Waterman map, was grubbed out in the 19th century. So that it's a good example of woodland sort of creeping over the landscape. Wayland woodland, that's the original woodland, A, but we have bits that have been added on. That's the Nab, which the document refers to as wood pasture in 1593. And C and D are clearly later extensions, another lynchet within the landscape. They're really nice when you come across these and spotted. So this is another a good example of primary ancient woodland, but it has been added to progressively. And Pulham Big Wood is a good example of this. The only record we have is from the Ely Coucher from 1216, I think it is, which refers to a woodland of about 160 acres. And the only remnant we have of that is probably Big Wood here. Evocative names, of course, Wood Farm, Wood Lane, and it would appear that's the remnant of the ancient woodland. That's the parish boundary. That has the feature and features indeed on it of a woodland boundary. And ditto that. And so that's probably the original ancient woodland shape. Progressively stubbed out probably when Wood Farm was established. New plantation was probably grubbed out and then subsequently replanted. And then the woodland, if you like, has crept over the landscape. So these areas have been progressively planted on what was the former common and green. So it's a good one to emphasise the complexities of expansion and contraction. And Littlewood Edgefield, I won't bore you too much with that, other than it's a good one to show what a lynchet can look like in the landscape. Clearly the photographer is a couple of metres below me. It's been progressively ploughed out, and a lovely huge old oak stall on the woodland boundary. Actually very, very little of that woodland. It's only that kind of core area that's really the ancient woodland. All the rest of it has been subsequently planted or crept over the heath in a later period. I'll skip a couple. These are just a couple of examples of wood banks which are marooned within the woodland, just a sort of further examples of how the woodland has sort of crept over the landscape. Bookwood Morley is another good example. And Hethelwood, if we look at this early map from the early 18th century, we can see how that's the woodland. A parkland has been established with a nice house, and they've used the woodland to create vistas running through the great wood. And if you survey the woodland today, you can pick out where the old avenues ran. And just to say very quickly that some of the most recent archaeology you're going to find in woodlands are going to be 19th century drainage ditches. So, you know, you've got to be careful what you're interpreting. Foxley Wood, Plaster Rhythm, a lot of ancient woodlands are. That's Horningtoft, Littlewood. But another good example where you have an earlier wood bank running through it, but it's been realigned at a later date. This is a very classic sort of bites being taken out of the woodland. Now, a few kind of pseudo-ancient woodlands. These are ones which are really are quite recent, but are still on the ancient woodland inventory. Dodds and Oliver's Wood were clearly planted in the 18th century, and they fit very nicely into the coaxial field systems. They're not on earlier maps at all, but they have appeared by the First Edition Ordnance Survey. America's Wood in South Norfolk is another good example. Almost none of it is truly ancient, but again, it is on the ancient woodland inventory. and it's been just been progressively added to as time goes on. And Ersham Wood, again, perhaps a better example because you've got a nice map to go with it. It's on the ancient woodland inventory, but most of it, quite clearly, you can see, is not on this map of 1712. Another quick example, maps of 1814 and 1880 for Primrose Grove and Old Grove, new woodlands have been established within the landscape in the 19th century. Not going to bother with Gordy Hall. Lopham Grove is a nice one. Tom and I walked through this surveying it. But classic ancient woodland, looks absolutely lovely. nice bank going the way all the way around it. Some sort of amorphous stuff going on down here. Very, what appears to be very typical ancient woodland. However, those banks appear to have just been put in to mark the parish boundary. Very typical sort of ancient woodlandy type structure inside of coppice with standards. Dog's Mercury, nice pollards on the boundary. But then you look at this map from the Arundel archives of the Duke of Norfolk, and lo and behold, in 1725 there's no woodland there. How am I doing for time? Another 5 minutes and then close up? Yeah. just to say quickly about some recent archaeology, it's not just about medieval stuff. You know, it's important to record what we see in recent times, and in East Anglia, of course, that's a lot to do with the Second World War, but even First World War. A lot of woodlands in Norfolk were used in the Second World War for bomb storage, or even after the war, Hethel Wood, which I showed you previously, was used as an Italian prisoner of war camp for about 5 years after the Second World War, for example, and you still see the concrete pads and that sort of thing within it. Sometimes the Lynchet is quite small, but it does appear that that air is that much lower there than here, so it's a possible question mark under the plough at some stage. Second World War features within it. Honeypot Wood, probably the most important one for World War II, remains in Norfolk. Very important for bomb storage areas within the woodland. Some people get really excited by this sort of stuff. So what are the conclusions? Okay, well, ancient woodlands do not represent a link with the natural vegetation of England. The woodland vegetation has been extensively modified. Woods and commons are often contiguous, thus have a common origin. Enclosure, if you like, was an act of lordly privatisation, hence the size of early wood banks. They're located on the edge of clays to reduce transport on unsurfaced tracks. As far as wood pastures are concerned, before the late 17th century, grazed woodland covered a greater area than enclosed coppice woodland, almost certainly in our part of the world. In the remaining wastes, wood pastures survived much longer than previously thought. Private wood pastures, the deer parks essentially, did not last so long, and some were incorporated into coppice woodland, like at Hockering. Not all coppice woodland originated in the early Middle Ages. some ancient woodland overlie areas which were farmed in the Middle Ages. Some of these woods were deliberately planted, others expanded through natural regeneration. And there's surprisingly quite a lot of evidence of planting of or within woodlands in medieval times. People forget that. So woods are and were dynamic, not stable environments. Only a few woods retain the same boundaries they were given when first enclosed. About a fifth of the woodlands on the ancient woodland inventory in my part of the world are secondary in character, but remember that's not a fifth by area, because secondary woodland tend to be smaller, which is one of the reasons you get this rapid spread of indicator species, particularly on heavy clays, where you have multi-species hedges, wide ditches, which act as reservoirs for these species and help them to spread. They're a tool, if you like, ancient woodland indicators. But we mustn't think that just because woods are dynamic and changing all the time that the value of woodlands is reduced in any way. Even pseudo-ancient woodlands have been in existence for a long time. Blurring the distinction between ancient and recent woodland does not so much reduce the importance of the former as raise the status of the latter. And even quite recent woodlands have a historic and cultural significance as well as potentially ecological and other significance. We would not, for example, condone the uncontrolled demolition of buildings just because they were built after 1600. Same applies to woodland. Woodland indeed requires more, not less, protection in these difficult times. Thank you very much.